Hey guys, Will here, oh so briefly to prop, so to speak, the First Player Championship. You can sign up over at www.firstplayerchampionship.com. That's our premier fan-run tournament over in Springfield, Missouri, over Memorial Day weekend. So that is going to have Joust on Saturday the 25th and Melee on Sunday the 26th. It's going to be a great time. Check out all the info and prizes and find out about your chance to win free entry to U.S. Nationals on Labor Day weekend. And that's on too. We're brothers here, Loras Mir declared. Holy brothers, sworn to the realm, to our god, and to each other. The Brotherhood Without Banners, Tom Sevenstrings plucked a string. The Knights of the Hollow Hill. Knights? Clegane made the word a sneer. Dondarrion's a knight. The rest of you are the sorriest lot of outlaws and broken men I've ever seen. I ship better men than you. Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Originally founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we decided to rebrand when the game relaunched in the second edition. A huge thank you goes out to Fantasy Flight Games and George R. R. Martin for this game and world we love, and of course to my co-hosts and you, the listeners. Please, if you enjoy the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your platform of choice. Comment on our Facebook threads, or even better, support us on Patreon. We love turning that kind of support back into the community. This is Season 10 of the White Book Podcast.
The end of the quote.
Yeah, that's the end of that passage.
Okay.
I thought it was a nice punch from him.
In the Alanis Morissette sense, I guess. Alla is currently on the beginning of the third season of Game of Thrones, and that features the Knights of the Hollow Hill pretty significantly. So,
Nice.
Not only does this podcast feature us reviewing that card, we have a special guest, Knight of the Hollow Hill.
Womp womp.
They can't tell who you are, but you just womp womp.
The joke was not good enough. Hi, I'm CT. I'm doing a pack review on the White Book. Hell has frozen over.
Yeah, how did Aaron guilt you into that?
It wasn't. He was literally the first person I thought of, I swear to God. I was like, he's perfect.
One time on Second Sons, CT did an entire cycle review, so can't...
Was I on that?
Wow. Yes, you were.
Did you guys go card by card that time?
We went faction by faction.
Okay, so he could just gloss over a bunch of crappy
stuff. We talked about all... It was like 3 hours.
Okay. Well, hopefully this will not be 3 hours.
It won't be.
Oh, I might fall asleep on air if it is.
You can't yawn more than Roy did last episode.
I was very tired.
Yeah.
This card
I felt bad that we made Roy do a show, actually.
Unsurprisingly, I did not.
Well, touche.
Thank you. City of Secrets, right? Is the title of the pack that we're jumping into to discuss today?
Ooh, I think so. Man, I lose track of pack names. Something fierce.
I have a feeling that they're named after mostly the city plots, right?
Go figure.
Yeah.
Checks out.
but we'll see. I could be wrong. But we have a city plot here in this pack, so we'll find out.
We'll get there.
If it's any good.
Not the one that this pack is named for, like the last pack did, though.
No.
That one actually makes sense.
So who wants to start us off?
I'm not reading star cards.
Ew, no, me neither.
All right, I guess I'll do start then.
That's Roy. Yeah.
So the first is a 4-cost, unique, 6-strength, loyal character, Small John Umber. He has a red and a blue icon. He is House Umber and Lord. He has renown. And then Small John Umber gets -1 strength for each plot in your plot card, in your use pile. And then we have an event, which is also loyal. It costs 1 gold. No surprises. And it is the action. Reveal your hand of at least 1 card. Then, until the end of the phase, each opponent cannot play events or bring cards out of shadows. I think Stark is clearly the winner in this pack. I think of all the factions, the other one, maybe Martell and Baratheon come the closest in just how much they just gain sheer power level. But both of these cards empower Stark across the board. It's slightly different archetypes. I think Small John obviously is a crossing card, but it has huge implications also in other mid-range Stark builds. And then No Surprises is the ultimate Stark No Fun card. It shores up a lot of Stark's bad matchups, particularly Targaryen and some Martell builds that rely on events. So it's a mirror breaker in some cases. I think a lot of Stark mid-range mirrors are going to come down to who can shut off your opponent's mirror first. And No Surprises is great for that. So this, I think, is actually an S-tier faction. Both of these cards are fantastic. I think both of these cards are going to see play pretty quickly and are going to be a fundamental meta shift. Like, Stark has been a tier one faction, but fighting with the other tier one factions to see which one's number one, I think this pack pushes them as the faction, the level one faction, the best faction in the game.
Go ahead, Aaron. So, No Surprises actually bothers me as a concept. Not that it cancels events, but that it cancels shadows. Like, yeah. we already have Barring the Gate for that. It's not like there's a card that just says, like, you cannot use stealth, and also you can't, like, marshal locations or something, right? Like, why would they just kill an entire keyword this way with this kind of card? It's very annoying, and it's not like shadows is, like, so strong that this is necessary. No yeah. Surprises is shadows or not. If it was literally just the event thing, it would still be crazy, crazy strong. But
yeah,
it's
that shadows stupid. Thing. I just want to chime in and agree with. Like, I've been playing a lot of Lannister and Tyrell shadows lately, and obviously there's really good Martell builds and stuff. And like, there are definitely turns where I don't actually marshal anything. I'm only counting on shadows stuff, and man, this is gonna bone that. Like, I can kind of play around a bar in the gates. It mucks with my stuff, but I could just choose to marshal some normal stuff. But like, the Stark player can do this to me after I've elected not to marshal anything normally, and I'm just counting on shadows. And you know, that could supremely, supremely bone a turn.
I mean, it can bone a game because Stark is really fast.
Yeah.
I think Small John is good, but I think Small John is kind of only good in crossing, and I'm not 1000% sure that exists. I don't really see him getting much below a 4 for 3. But I don't know.
With renown.
With renown. Yeah, yeah. I think he's good. I think he's very good. But I think he's probably a 1 of in crossing, and maybe a 1 of in Sea of Blood. But I don't know if he sees play really anywhere else. No Surprises, however, is busted. I think S sounds about right for me. Guest host?
These are definitely the two most un-Martelli cards I've ever seen. I hate them. So, Literally, like, it's just disgusting. I definitely agree, like, Small John, I feel like, pops up here and there, but he's probably not, like, a dominating new presence in Stark decks. No Surprises is definitely going to affect the meta in a very strong way. No Surprises is totally an S, basically, for all the reasons already discussed. Small John's probably, like, a B plus?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty fair for Small John. He really reminds me of, like, a first edition sort of character, right? Like, very efficient, but not, like, a huge ability or anything, so he's just so worth it to consider as a 1X in a lot of decks, but the way Second Ed kind of skews, like, even with these characters, we've never really quite hit that, you know, lots of unique characters at 1X in a deck. So he'll probably see less play than I actually expected.
Yeah, Small John's kind of cool early, and then if not, you're just like, well, he stands Wyman and draws me a card.
Mm-hmm.
He also provides you with additional renown to close, right? I think that's why he will see play definitely. I mean, obviously in Crossing because he has six strength. And NC Blood, and you could see him as 1X in midrange, because just sometimes you need that one extra body, right? That Stark now has two of those options, Dacy and Small John. So you could either run one of each, or you could choose of which one do you think makes more sense to your strategy. And I think just renown redundancy for the game plans that all the three major Stark archetypes, No Fun, Sea of Blood, and Crossing, like, just having more flexibility in that four spot is really good for them. And I think you'll see Small John number come in and out of decks, but I think he will be a presence in the meta throughout.
I will say I've always disliked Dacy because, like, when you Nightmares her or V-Blade her, she's garbage. When you Nightmare her Small John, you're like, cool.
Yeah.
This is fine.
Yeah.
And V-Blade doesn't touch him, so he definitely has some ups over Dacy in that spot.
So
you lose the renown, but you get a lot more.
Actually, you know, that makes me think. It's been a little while since I've reread Mira's exact text. Can I blank my own cards?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Perfect. I mean, it's a corner case, which I said I didn't want to get into, but the thought of blanking my own Small John to win a challenge could be fun.
But it's a two-card combo. That's fine.
Yeah, and that's not a corner case.
Well, to be honest here, like,
see a blunt, these are a really strong combo.
I do think that these are two of the best cards in the pack, so they're worth providing a lot of time with. And I also want to go back to No Surprises real quick, though, because right now where the meta is like events are becoming increasingly more important, and event packages across a variety of decks. And a lot of it has to do with Sea of Blood, but it has to do with the fact that, you know, Targaryen is extremely present. You had Team Tyrell at Jesse's Name Day begin to start breaking open some new Tyrell decks. There's just like a lot of events floating around the meta, and to give an answer. And I think that No Surprises, the reason it's such a push card is they wanted a safety valve that should these shadow, because we're getting, I think it's next pack, a busted Shadows agenda. And should Shadow start running over the meta, Stark is an answer that you can go to that can reliably shut it down. So.
I guess. I totally feel like, I don't know. I feel like sometimes we go like a year without an answer card. Perhaps preemptive answer cards aren't the best idea. Like, they're not good at predicting the meta. But okay, I'll take it.
I agree, but like, we have a couple busted Shadows cards that are in this pack alone. So
I don't think that's true, but we'll get there. I think we have good Shadows cards. I don't think there are any busted Shadows cards in this pack.
It would be depressing if Shadows dies before it ever lives.
Because
and we have like all this busted stuff that went on before.
Right. Like, Shadows should exist. Like, it should, like, it's the keyword of the cycle. It should get its own moment. I'm not convinced it's going to, but it should.
I've got my fingers crossed, but we'll see. It's interesting that the first cycle featuring Shadows, I think, as a general rule, kind of underpushed all the Shadows cards. And then now that we're starting to see the Shadows stuff kind of move up into more interesting design space, then we get this to crush it back down. So I don't know.
It is one house, though.
Yeah.
I mean, you could just be like, ah, crap, Stark, you know, and change your game plan. It may not necessarily kill. And it's like, It's one event. They have to draw it.
And they have to draw it in, like, you can play Hand's Judgment, right? Sure. Like, it's only a one gold event, right?
Yeah. It doesn't feel like it just kills Shadows, but it just makes Stark, like, the house that you have to be afraid of.
That's
fair.
It pushes Hand's Judgment back in the meta. So, like, there's an interesting give and take there that could be possible.
But that's what it does. It, like, because it really screws up City of Shadows. Like, it's not the standard Shadows deck where it's an issue. It's that it really royally screws City. That annoys me.
That's the first agenda. Which one are you talking about?
No. The new one.
Like Kingdom of Shadows?
I think that's actually called City in second edition. I could be crazy, but I don't think it's called Assault.
Something.
No. Assault is the one that already exists.
Yeah, Assault already exists, but no, I don't think it's Kingdom. I think Kingdom is the first edition name or something. I could be wrong. Whatever the hell the new one is called.
I think the new one is City of Shadows.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. I will look it
up. It's the new one is Kingdom of Shadows, according to Thrones.
Oh, okay. Apparently, that's it was wrong. So, all right, Kingdom of Shadows.
Was what right.
What it does. Good job, Roy. I'm going to say you were right again later this episode. So, Kingdom of Shadows, I think, is what's really screwed by No Surprises, because you're not marshaling anything in that. Assault just puts back in Hand's Judgment and is probably okay. You just save it for that against Stark, and it's good in the Sea of Blood meta anyway. But I'm pretty sure that City of Shadows is royally blown by this, and that's a shame, because City of Shadows is super cool.
Yeah, it could be a real problem for Kingdom of Shadows.
Yeah. I'm going to keep calling it City, because now that's in my head, apparently.
Let's call it Agenda of Shadows.
Agenda
of Shadows. But we already have another Agenda of Shadows. Assault.
That one's not going to get played anymore.
I think it will. I really like Assault. I think Assault's really good.
I do too, but I don't know. I feel like it's way under value compared to the new one.
Maybe.
We'll find out.
Yeah. That's in a whole different review.
All right. Boss Man, do you want to give us the green cards?
Sure thing. First up, we have the return of a champ card from former podcast co-host Brett Zeiler. We've got Arrogant Contender, not loyal, 5-cost military and intrigue icons, 4 strength, knight trait. While Arrogant Contender is participating in a challenge, it gets +1 strength for each participating character an opponent controls, and reaction after you win a challenge in which Arrogant Contender is attacking alone. It gains 1 power for each defending character to a maximum of 3 power. Then we've got Show of Strength. That's a loyal event for 2. Challenges action until the end of the phase. Treat each character with strength 3 or lower as if its printed text box were blank, except for traits. gosh. Arrogant Contender. Criminally underpowered in first edition. And, virtually the same here, right? It's got the same ability and everything. The fact that it has to be attacking alone, I think, really hampers its ability to gain large amounts of power. So, like, at best, you're hoping your opponent, like, either you get him through undefended on a challenge, or your opponent, like, they don't want to chump defend because he'll still win, and then you get a power, and it's almost like it was unopposed. I don't know. It's kind of a funky space that still probably isn't going to work in second ed. I can maybe see it in a melee deck that wants to grab some extra ways to get some power somewhere, but Tyrell's probably got enough other options. Show of Strength looks much more interesting to me. You know, kind of this blanket nightmares effect is very interesting, but I'm not sold that it's going to be playable at that strength 3 or lower cutoff. I mean, what are the characters that are sitting in play that are at that cutoff that I really care about blanking? And of course, keep in mind, it blanks mine too, so it can muck with my scheming septons and stuff. I don't know. I feel like most of the characters I would like to blank with this are not going to be in play when I would want to play it. You know, they're going to be ambushed in, they're going to be flea bottomed in or whatever. And this only affects the characters that are already in play when you play it. So I don't think it's going to pan out.
This would affect everything that comes into play, right? Like, reading this, I immediately think, oh, oh god, this pack really hates orange cards.
No, I could have sworn that I had read that this does not apply to stuff that comes into play after it's played.
Until the end of phase three, each character. Okay.
Creates a lasting effect. The question is whether or not the lasting effect covers only cards that it sees when it's played, or creates an effect similar to Fortify Position.
I don't think it's Fortify Position. I think it's much more likely that it's the former. But
so if it works on everything for the phase, it's very good. If it only hits what's in play at the moment, it's definitely not very good.
Yeah, that's the catch. There's all that Martell stuff, mainly, that if it comes into play after this...
And Night's Watch, I think, is the two factions that this is targeting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
it's not printed.
I'm scrolling through the Facebook comments from the initial post. See if I can scare it up.
But... while Will's doing that, I'll talk a little bit about these cards. I think Show of Strength is meant, I think, a little bit as a hoser for Tyrell against Night's Watch and Martell. But I don't really think the opportunity cost is worth it. I think Tyrell has better answers to those factions in the form of either passive power, passive power against both factions, to be completely honest. If it really hates Martell and really hates Night's Watch, Tyrell's opportunities are better. I think it had right now, actually, one of the reasons to play Tyrell is its low cost characters, like left and right, give you a lot of really good answers to see a blood.
Why would you ever shut off your own left and right?
I know. So why play that
card? You also shut off your little draw girl.
Yeah, the draw, both all your forms of card event, character based card advantage are turned off. Like, I just. Maybe in a toolboxy Tyrell deck that's running something like the Growing Ambition package to just pull what it needs might run one of these, but that could be the most. It's definitely a D card. And then Arrogant Contender. it could maybe see play in something like Tyrell Dragon or Tyrell Fealty. That like wants to do tricks with a single character and wants an additional source of power, but you need in that case, like, it might create some catch 22s for your opponent in that situation where they know that you can combo off and maybe this gives you a little acceleration and they have to be like, okay, am I gonna block an Arrogant Contender a bunch and give them an opportunity to gain additional 3 power, or am I gonna underblock him and let them get their events off more easily? So maybe there's some tension there that's interesting. But other than that, I can't really see this 5-for-4. Just there's better green cards. There's better non-loyal green cards. So this is also, I think, like a D card. So this is like a D pack for Tyrell, I think, overall.
Wow, that was a lot of words for Arrogant Contender for both of you. Arrogant Contender is trash. He's an actively, offensively bad card. I'm not wasting any thoughts on that. What I do want to talk about for sure is Strength, though. It's got a significantly worse effect than No Surprises. It costs one more gold, and it hits your own stuff. And No Surprises is asymmetrical. Like, how is this at all balanced?
I mean, factions do the same thing at different cost points and with different drawbacks. Well, but I'll go back to card design theory with Glazer. Like, different factions can do the same thing, but they have to do them at different costs and with different drawbacks. So one faction can do something hyper efficiently, and another faction can't if they have to pay some sort of premium and have a drawback. It's how you balance.
They're not doing the same thing. Well, yeah, sure. One is just doing nothing terribly for expensive, right?
Yeah.
While one is doing everything amazingly for nothing.
That happens all the time.
Sure, Show of Strength should really be one cost, is what I'm saying.
Maybe.
Or No Surprises should be 2. Either, like, No Surprises at 2, I think, is a much more fair card.
It's a harder card to cancel, then, though. Like, there's a tension in No Surprises, right? Like,
There's not, because most of the factions that want to cancel it are canceling it by, are canceling it with the free Henge Judgment.
From Shadows?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
It just depends on the meta, right? So it's like No Surprises is probably always good, but
yeah, see a blood too.
Look, for example, it does nothing against builders, but Show of Strength is incredibly good against builders. Like,
no surprises does stuff against builders, because like, if you can play it, you just play it in the marshalling phase, right?
I mean, sure, but like,
but how many, look, they don't play a lot of defensive Shadows cards.
They play
like one Shadow guy and like one event.
They play one event and maybe two, so you neutered. I mean, you would need to time it perfectly, which is fine. I mean, no surprise is going to sit dead in your hand for most of the round, but you need to make sure. So in that case, though, you need to. I mean, we're getting lost in the weeds here, so I'm going to just stop us here. But
all right, I'm giving the house a D. Let's just move on to cards that are good.
I think that's probably about where I am on.
Show of Strength was clearly designed when Danny thought that the Rookery format was going to take off.
There you go. Okay.
If I were Brett Zeiler, I would have wished that my champ credit had been put on Night of Summer. DB next.
Yeah, man. I wish this had worked out a little bit better. Also, I could not find the mention that I was looking for in the group, but I messaged Colin, who just replied, and said, yes, Show of Strength only affects stuff already in play. So,
all right.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So the faction is an F.
Let's move. Yeah.
So who wants to read the Night's Watch, CT or Glazer?
Definitely not me. CT beat me with builders, so I think he has to read them.
Okay, fine. Yes, I flipped my wall on the flop before you did.
Whatever, you beat me.
I still don't like Night's Watch that much. Owen the Oaf is a 4/4 intrigue, non-loyal steward. He has no attachments but weapon. And while he is participating in a challenge, each character with more than one challenge icon does not contribute its strength to the challenge. And then we have a dash cost shadow event that is loyal called Shadow of the Wall. It has a shadow cost of 0 and action. Choose and stand a character with one or fewer challenge icons. If there is a winner plot card revealed, return Shadow of the Wall to your hand instead of placing it in your discard pile. These cards are... Bleh.
Yeah, that's generous.
I mean, Owen is, like...
Owen's amazing.
I think he's good, right? But, like, you're only going to run him in, like, goofy steward decks.
Not goofy. You mean good steward decks, like Rat Cook?
Yeah, I think you run him in good steward decks.
Goofy, like, steward decks.
When wall shit starts rotating, like, I'm playing him in my regular wall decks. Because Owen the Oath plus a Practice Blade is real, wow, real good.
And Practice Blade and Cycle 1 Glazer.
Yeah.
Is it? Awesome, yeah. Thank God. Okay.
Then, oh, thank then God. That's a perfectly balanced... Never mind. I'm like...
No, it is. Practice Blade is balanced. Practice Blade on Owen the Oath is ridiculously unbalanced.
I mean, he... whatever.
Owen the Oath is going to be good. He's just straight up going to be good. He's going to be super annoying with Practice Blade for as long as he can. Like, I'm pretty sure he goes into all the stupid, like, build a John decks just because he can turn off military for a few turns while you get set up. And I'm pretty, the cohort ones. And I'm pretty sure he goes in, whatchamacallit? I'm pretty sure he goes in Tamas style Night's Watch defense decks as a more than one of. You get a Practice Blade on him, he's going to be fantastic. And really, just saying, like, hey, you can't intrigue me, Cersei. Is pretty damn good in and of itself.
Shadow of the Wall is just garbage, though.
Yeah, I'm not talking about Shadow of the Wall. That's trash.
I mean, it's trash.
Shadow of the Wall.
I do think
Shadow of the Wall makes Xylas card look playable.
It's definitely worse than Arrogant Contender. The opportunity cost of playing Shadow of the Wall is way too high for barely an upside and no, and there's literally no reason for Night's Watch to play Winter Plots besides maybe its own internal winter plots.
God, it takes you a lot of words to take that.
Alright. Owen the Oath is an important card because we're reaching a critical point of Stuart's. I tested Rat Cook for Jesse's Name Day. It did well at Jesse's Name Day. I think it's a legitimate deck, and I think that the fact that what the problem that the deck suffers from is a few of the Stuart's are just garbage, and Owen is not garbage. So the ability to add additional redundancy in the theme and maybe even trim some of the garbagey Stuarts out of your deck really puts Rat Cook in a good position. And you know, it's a tragedy that Kyle Vansel will no longer be able to play the game with a successful Rakkrook deck being consistent and a force in the meta. But I'm excited. I think Rakkrook's really cool, and it's a lot of a fun deck. And so he's really good. I think O and the Oath is a solid B, but Shadow of the Wall is an F card, so I've got to give like a C to the overall faction, C plus.
I'm at a C plus for the same logic.
I would give Owen a whole other letter grade just because he mentions Patch Face in his lore.
Ha! Huh. Perfect. If only Owen was also a fool to go with an O.
That would be too powerful. The Night's Watch, the Barra Watch Fool Steward deck would just be too much.
You can't even make him an oaf and a fool because he's no attachments but weapon.
No!
What if he had the oaf trait and that was just like,
yeah,
he was the only one? That'd be amazing.
That would be great. And they could just change his name to just Owen. No, the oaf. Just wait for people to put it together.
Owen the Steward?
I'm on Barry, yeah. Red Keep. How do you pronounce that?
Jailer.
Is it
Jailer.
Just
Jailer? Jailer, yeah.
Okay.
Jailer.
Sure. Okay.
Like Rolar, you gotta emphasize it. Red Keep Jailer.
Oh, yeah. Martin doesn't care how you pronounce the word in his universe, so pronounce it however you want.
Also true.
I've seen the word a million times, but I've never heard it said out loud. Red Keep Jailer is a 4/4 military power ally guard. He's House Barra, because I don't think I said that while I was trying to stare at his name. He is a shadow card with shadow 4. He has an action, move up to 2 power from your faction card to a Barra character to put Red Keep Jailer into play from shadows. And then the Black Cells. Unique Barra location. Loyal, unlike our Jailer friend here. Shadow 2. After a card you control comes out of shadows, kneel the Black Cells to choose an opponent's character. Till the end of the phase, that character cannot kneel or stand. Black Cells is phenomenal. I'm not sure there's enough shadow stuff in Barra until Kingdom of Shadows comes out to really benefit it, but like, it's a reason to play Red Keep Jailer.
Yeah.
I don't think there's space for Red Keep Jailer in Barra decks right now, especially once their box comes out and they get all that sweet, sweet stuff we saw spoiled. But like, even now, like, they don't really have any shadow synergy besides Black Cells, so I don't think that's quite enough to play it. In a Shadows deck, I think it's playable. There's that early, like, power challenge when you've won a couple challenges and you're really just sort of, your opponent lets them go unopposed because, like, who cares? It's just power for them to take back. And, like, Red Keep Jailer, you're like, no, thanks. It's going to be on a Barra character now. And you wasted your challenge. So, it's not bad. It might see a little bit of play. But the Black Cells in a City of Shadows deck is going to be amazing. Like, I think it alone is kind of enough of a reason to run Barra as Kingdom of Shadows, because Black Cells is just, like, super strong. If the character can't kneel or stand, they can't participate in challenges, unless they're Jaime and just participating in military, I guess. But, like, for the most... So, don't use it on Jaime Lannister. Corset.
Or Cersei or Marcella.
It is...
Fuck Cersei, anyway.
Okay, or Cersei or Marcella. Or, like... Or a core old bear if the wall is out. And so
that's a bridge too far.
That's going
to
be good.
You went there before you went to I Am No One to Anyone. Like, you're like, Corset Old Bear. Yeah.
I've got Corset Old Bear on my head because I'm convinced that's what I want to do with the prince that was promised.
Ooh.
I spent an hour talking to Colt about it and about how we could, like, figure out how to get him, like, to a million strength and then just gain power and jump in, like, a million 7 strength Night's Watch characters. It's going to be amazing. But, it's also completely going to be unplayable, but the 1 out of 50 games it works, it's going to be unreal. Black Cells is awesome, is the point of this whole rant. And Red Keep Jailer is good enough that I'm going to go with a B-.
Yeah, I think that's
the Black Cells gets a big hit by not being a framework, though, anymore. Like, that definitely sucks. It's like,
yeah,
now you can't just be like, standing phase, I bring a card out of shadows, your best guy can't get up. So, like, that hits Black Cells pretty hard in its efficiency, but it's definitely still a really good card.
It's a more balanced version of the Black Cells, because it has counter synergy.
Well, first, it wasn't even unique in that first edition.
Yeah, that too.
So I think it's a balanced card because it has counter synergy with a lot of the other bear themes, like the dominance theme. So if you're telling your opponent's characters that they can't stand, then they're going to win dominance. Can't kneel, excuse me. But it does have a limit, which I think is where it's really powerful. So if there is a bear deck that can consistently bring a bunch of cards out of shadows, then it's going to be extremely powerful. Kneels. Does it kneel? Oh, it kneels, excuse me.
I mean, still, so, even once a turn, that's a pretty strong ability.
It is a strong ability. But I think the problem is, I actually think that this might encourage maybe a bear assault deck, because bear doesn't have a lot of good native shadows cards, and maybe a minus one or plus one, what is it? What's the drawback there? Minus one gold, right? Might end up being more manageable for bear than raising the cost of every single character you marshal. So we'll see.
You just don't marshal characters.
That's fair. But we'll see. I think this is definitely going to make people look at Bera, and it's really strong. The Jailer is fine in the mid game, so this is a nice solid B. We'll see. We'll see where it goes. These are definitely some of the best Bera cards that we've seen in a while. So I think with the box, I would not be surprised to see Bera rising pretty quick. So
Martell Stag guard decks are going to be off the chain.
Oh, he's a guard. I didn't even think about that. Oh, we get multiple guards this pack.
Yeah, he is.
I did.
That alliance deck.
I think almost all of these. All of these guys are guards.
Love it. That way you can run your Martell Kingdom of Shadows guard rainbow deck.
Yes.
Give the rainbow guard.
That aren't really a thing. Ouch.
Will
sends me back to Lanny. Okay. We've got the Regent's Guard. It's a non-loyal shadows character for 4 military and intrigue icons, 4 strength, ally, and hey, the guard trait. Shadows 4, and then action, return a Lannister non-ally character with printing cost 4 or higher to your hand. Put the Regent's Guard into play from shadows. And then Pyromancer's Cache. This one's a 2-cost loyal attachment. Item trait. Location only. Treat attached location as if its printed text box were blank, except for traits. And attached location gains action. Kneel this location to draw 1 card. I'm going to start with the Regent's Guard. This one I am super excited about. This sort of reusability on my actual effect characters in Lannister is something that I'm really looking forward to, and hoping that it can make up for some of the kind of lack of card advantage they have from like a sheer card volume perspective. So I'm looking forward to, you know, bouncing my my Sir Robert Strongs back to hand so I can trigger them again. Queen's Assassins, Red Keep Spy, or...
They're too cheap, Will. What? It's printed cost 4 or higher.
Oh, yeah, 4 or higher. Never mind. Not the guard or the assassin.
The Robert Strong interaction.
Damn. So Strong and Mandanmore are going to be the main ones I'm going to want to hit then. But... you know, if nothing else, I think I'm going to really enjoy that Mandanmore trigger. Played a couple games over the weekend where I triggered Mandanmore literally every round of each game. So that was pretty fun. So I'm looking forward to more ways to do that, because that really chips away at the opponent. The trickier one here is Pyromancer's Cache, where I know I am in a minority in that I think this is going to be a flash in the pan. Other people are going to be super pumped about it, kind of like Fever Dreams or something, and it's just going to turn out to not be worth it. We're already paying more than a Seized by the Guard or Frozen Solid or something to blank my opponent's location, and I'm giving them card advantage by doing it. I'm giving them an additional use for that location. I mean, there are some decks with a super key location, you know, your wall decks or whatever, that maybe that's worth it. But the other prime targets, I suppose, are high card advantage locations where the trade of like giving them only a single card a turn is better than them getting three per turn from Marine, or maybe more from Dorn or Highgarden or what have you. It's still not great. And the flip side of playing it on my own stuff, I mean, best case scenario is probably blanking my own Rose Road and giving up Econ to get a very fragile draw card. Maybe doable, but I also still feel really gold hungry in Lannister. I'm not super excited to give up income for that. I don't think it's going to pan out. Like, I don't know. If I had to give Lannister a rating out of this, though, I'm probably going to give him a B. I really love the Regent's Guard.
Yeah, I mean, like, the Regent's Guard is sweet because Harrenhal and Lionstar are things.
Yeah, there we go. Harrenhal. So, I knew there was some stuff I was forgetting. Like,
I definitely, as somebody who's played a lot of Clansmen, the Regent's Guard makes me pretty excited. Like, even if they don't actually add anything to those sub-themes, like, anything that's letting you just get back your Harrenhal and your Lionstar triggers is going to be pretty solid. So, I mean, he's good there for sure. I'm kind of divided on the cash as well. But sometimes I think to myself, like, I mean, I'd rather have this sometimes than a gold mine. If I'm paying the same cost, I'd rather just draw a card than draw and discard a card. So,
well, but you're also losing the income off the gold mine when you do that.
Right. You're also putting it on something that you probably want.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there is that trade-off, but I think it'll find its place. I just don't think it's going to be like, oh, this has to be in every Lannister deck. But yeah, these cards are probably like B minus cards.
I think Regent's Guard is super awesome in every Lannister Shadows deck, because all those decks want to do is use Mandan and whatever Gregor's stupid new name is over and over and over again. Yeah. That dude. They want to use those all the time, and this makes that doable. So it is therefore awesome, because I want to use those literally all the time. I would be running three of him in any Shadows deck, and I think Shadows is probably Lannister's best deck. And I love Pyromancer's Cash. One extra card a turn goes an awfully long way for Lannister. I am probably in the mid-game sticking it on a gold location, especially notably because Lannister doesn't have a restricted it really gives a shit about. So I'm choosing between Flea Bottom and Trade Routes as a general rule. And if I'm choosing Trade Routes, I have absolutely no gold problems. So I'm really excited to just get more cards as Lannister and be able to shut off, like, whatever. Like, I'm perfectly happy to shut off even a Flea Bottom at the cost of, like, you get to draw a card instead. Great. I'll take that trade literally 100% of the time.
It feels super good, too, if they Froso or Seize by the Guard your location, then you can just put cash on it, and you're not out anything.
Yeah. I think it's I think cash is just phenomenal. I think this is an A house.
So let's talk a little bit. So I agree with everyone. I think Regent's Guard, I think it breathes new life into, I wish Jesse was here, at least for this moment, Clansmen, because Clansmen has a glut of four or five cost characters that are great targets for this, and that you want to reuse, plus the Shadows cards that everybody else has talked about. So I think we'll see the Regent's Guard get a lot of play, and is just this rehabilitation of Lannister, this willingness to aggressively push Lannister cards that we've been seeing a little bit recently is definitely in the forefront here. So all those red card fans out there should be pretty happy. I think cash is definitely one of the most interesting cards in the pack. So I think it's worth talking about first what it's like on your location. So it's really hard for your opponent to two for one you because it's non-terminal. So I don't actually think, like Will said, that it's a vulnerable like form of card advantage because, okay, say you put this on your Rose Road or your Western Thiefdom and they newly made Lord it now because it's not limited or they put it, you still get the cash back.
That's,
and so
I did miss the
you can then play it on the next location. right? And then so it's very powerful in the mid to late game, and that's where Lannister just desperately needs cards, because every other faction has really strong internal draw to sort of catch you up in that, you know, plot three card card drought. And Counting Coppers, like, no offense, is just not a very good card right now. And sort of that, because Lannister has to lean on effects like that, it's significantly weaker. So this is its ability to leverage that. So on your opponent's location, I'm a little bit more skeptical. I don't necessarily agree with Glazer that I would like to put this on a flea bottom and give my opponent a card draw anytime they want.
I think you're wrong.
But I mean, I could be wrong. I'm frequently wrong. That is my great burden as a human being. But
it's super good on every four cost location.
Yes, that's where I was going to get to. Four or six. Yeah. It hoses.
And then it's situational on like flea bottom or some of the lower cost.
Right. And Glazer's, I think, particularly so hard for this is if it hoses wall strategies, both of them, really hard. If you have two of these in your deck, it's really difficult for a Night's Watch deck that's running either of the walls to keep up, because you run one confiscation, and the opportunity cost of running a second confiscation just for Lannister is really poor. So it gives Glazer's second favorite faction a clear out to his maybe second least favorite type archetype. So I can definitely see why he's so bullish on it. But I think that this is a strong A-minus faction, and I think red card fans like Glazer and our wayward co-host Jesse should be really happy with this pack.
There is one thing you reminded me of here, Roy. You mentioned something that led me to realize there's a huge net fail here with Pyromancer's Cache. Sure, you know, if the location gets put to the sword, the Pyromancer's Cache goes back to hand, but really, shouldn't it being put to the sword just blow up all your locations?
Maybe.
That's a great way to make this card never playable. Yeah.
I mean, that's fair. I'm not saying Nedliness is always a win in the actual gameplay.
Nedliness is not next to godliness. In this
there right. we go.
I 100% know Aaron wants to do the Martell cards. Correct, Aaron?
Did we just skip?
Greyjoy next, no. though?
Well, but what I'm saying is, hold on, we have to decide who's going to read the Greyjoy cards.
I'm reading Martell. Our guest list should read Martell cards.
Okay, so do you want to read Targaryen or Greyjoy cards, Glazer?
Definitely Targaryen.
All right, so I will read the Greyjoy cards then. So we have our second Alanis Greyjoy, right? Because there wasn't one in the box.
Yeah.
She is a unique, loyal, five-cost, green and blue, four-strength, House Harlaw, lady and queen. Woo, for that brief period of time, she was alive while Balon was king. Reaction, after a Greyjoy location enters play under your control, draw one card, limit once per phase. And then we have probably the most controversial card that was spoiled early on. Spoiler, I think from the Walkers got this. A one gold printed cost, unique, non-loyal Greyjoy Shadows location. That's a warship, Shadow X. It's the Night Flyer, to be clear. Reaction, after Night Flyer comes out of Shadows, choose a location with printed cost X or lower and discard it from play, plus one initiative. All right, let's go to Alanis first. I think Alanis is a good card. I don't know what Greyjoy decks are cutting to fit her. I think the five cost slot is a little awkward for Greyjoy right now. But I'm sure there could be some warship strategies that want to run her at like 2x. And I think that, like, for example, the five cost Aeron from the box ended up being a little bit of a dud outside of Drowned God. So the question is whether or not Alanis is, who's a worse card because she doesn't have insight herself, is worth it. Maybe some all-in warship strategy. Night Flyer is my least favorite card in the pack. This specific point and click location removal in a faction that already has the best location and efficient location removal, plus it furthers your game plan, is bad. But I mean, it's a fantastic, but bad for the game. I really do not like this card from a balance and perspective, but it is extremely strong card. It is an S, maybe an A plus or S tier card. That gives Greyjoy an easy point and click removal to the its location-based problems that then has synergies with some of its best other cards. So I expect that we will 100% see Night Flyer as at least 1x in many Greyjoy mid-range decks, and Alanis, I am much more skeptical. So I would give Greyjoy, just on Night Flyer alone, an A- from where it is right now. So go ahead, boys.
Alanis is incredible. Like, I think it's hard to overstate exactly how good Alanis is. She's basically almost a guaranteed one card every turn for Greyjoy, and very likely two. I think she's at least a one of in every Greyjoy deck going forward, and might be more than a one of in decks that are really relying on worship strategies, like Box Euron strategies. I think the potential to get two cards a turn as Greyjoy is just going to be completely crazy strong. Night Flyer is likewise busted as hell, but it's busted as hell as a one of in each deck, with the knowledge that you can go get a second if you need it. However, unless you're running support of the people or the good Asha, you're going to have trouble seeing it. I think both of these cards are real, real good, and this is an A-plus faction.
They're extremely good. I very much agree that Alanis Greyjoy is very, very good. And it's not going to be hard at all to get, at the bare minimum, a card every single turn. But I think two is much more likely. Night Flyer, I definitely agree with Roy that I have reservations about a card at this high point-and-click power level being added to the game in general, and Greyjoy in particular, especially because this does not have that standard non-limited restriction here, which is going to really make me cry when this hits some of my Tyrell locations, I'm sure. But just in general, I think a little too easy. But still, the cards are extremely good, so I actually feel like Greyjoy comes out the best out of this whole pack. So I'm going to give them an S.
I think Alanis is a cool card because a lot of the Greyjoy decks right now are running like the new 5-cost Dampair, just because he's efficient and good at drawing cards. And like running a splattering of Drown God characters, because like obviously you have Vens and like the 2-drop. So the more worshipy themed decks can just basically swap that module now. And change things up to get some draw out of Alanis instead. So, you know, and maybe there'll be some, like, cool queen stuff later. But, yeah, she seems pretty good. And then you can hear me rant about Night Flyer and other podcasts at great length. I think this card's really bad for the game. And, like, even if I'm wrong and it's not the doomsday of the game, like, I think in your average, like, 5-6-plat game, it's not going to be hard to trigger it 2, maybe 3 times. And it just the snowball effect that's going to create.
Are you triggering it 3 times?
I mean, you could draw a second. You can. All right, let's just throw out random ideas here. You can sack it to go get. Yeah. So you're using the warship event to pull warships out.
Yeah.
To get it. Or you're just drawing it. Or you're building orders for it. You're sacking your first one with any number of effects to play a second one. You're putting it back in shadows if you're bannering Lion, or if you're Kraken bannering, or if you're Lion, you know what I mean.
Kingdom of Shadows. Like, this goes in one of in every Kingdom of Shadows deck, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like, I think that average...
In Kingdom of Shadows, though, but Kingdom can only pull characters.
The only character?
Yeah, really? I just double-checked it a minute ago. Because I was thinking...
Oh, yeah, it is only characters. Yes, apologies. I'm sorry.
Oh, well, that helps.
That does help.
So that's not as bad. But, I mean, even if you're just Lanny Kraken or Greyjoy Lion, like, mm-hmm. I think that even if this card only triggers once or twice a game, if it hits the right locations, your opponent will not recover.
Yeah. I agree.
It's just, it's that strong.
I mean, the key thing is Greyjoy didn't need more non-challenge-based ways to hose the locations that are answers to it. And at that, like, I don't even care about, like, if someone breaks it by figuring out all these abuse cases that CT talked about in the Facebook group and on Wars to Come, that's fine, whatever. But just like playing this card fairly and honestly, I think is too much for Greyjoy. I am a little bit, I'm still more Alana skeptical. I just don't, I mean, I think the point about Worship decks is well taken, and I do think she'll be strong there, but just Greyjoy decks are tight, and I just don't, I wonder what, like, Greyjoy Sea of Blood is cutting to find space for Alanis. I'm wondering what Greyjoy Crossing is cutting to find room for her, particularly since the Drown God package also gains you power.
Yeah, it'd be more mid-range slow Greyjoy decks.
Mid-range slow Greyjoy decks build about warships, which is fine, and those are powerful decks, but the question is, are they going to be outclassed by other Greyjoy decks? So I think she's a powerful card, but I think I'm probably understandably the most skeptical of four.
She feels like she'll be maybe bad. She'll scale up later. Maybe there'll be some cool queen stuff or something, but yeah, you're right. She's pretty like marginal compared to, like, if Dampier hadn't just came out, she'd be a lot more exciting. But Dampier does generally do things like all these things better and synergizes better with other.
She's better in most non-Drowned God decks than Dampier.
Really? Do you think she's better in Crossing? Because the Crossing wants to run the two drop that dies and gives you a power.
Yeah, and just inherently you have three fences already. So it's like, or so you, Drowned God fanatic, if you will.
Yeah, fences. It's fine.
So, I mean, that's a legitimate question, Glazer. I'm not trolling you. Like,
oh, would can you repeat would it? You, I was thinking.
So Crossing, right? So Crossing has a minor Drowned God package, right? It runs at least one of the new Aeron, and it runs three of the dies and gains you a power Drowned God 2-drop. And then it's running three Vinces because it's all Greyjoy decks, right? So you have a mini Drowned God package. You use Aeron as a supplemental card advantage. Are you cutting that for Alanis?
Nope. I'm running both.
So that's two, you run both? So what?
Madman.
So what cards are you? So what are you cutting out of Greyjoy Crossing to fit this girl who draws you a card but doesn't do anything else in the challenges phase, doesn't have insight?
I'm going to look at the Greyjoy Crossing I've been playing. Give me 2 seconds. I've got to reload. Yeah.
I assume this is a 62-card Jesse list that has three Reader in it, and that's why you have room to cut for Alanis Greyjoy.
It is not. It is also... yeah, if there's space. I'm just going to leave it at their space. Like, the deck is actually 60 cards, so A, I could just go to the right number of cards. But B, yeah, we're good.
You could cut a 7 cost Victarion, hopefully.
All right. So, Glazer, you're reading the
Targ
cards.
Black Market Merchant, 2-for-1. Excuse me. Oof, 2-for-1, Intrigue Power. Shadow 2, Merchant, after Black Market Merchant comes out of Shadows. Search the top 10 cards of your deck for an attachment with printed cost 3 or lower, and attach it to an nullable character you control and shuffle your deck. Then Shadow of the East is a Shadow's loyal location. Shadow 0, choose an attachment, discard it from play. If there's a Summer plot card revealed, return Shadow of the East to your hand instead of placing it in your discard pile. I could actually see a 1 Shadow of the East and 1 Karth in a fair amount of Targ decks. I don't think that's terrible. Like, especially like an HRD Marine, where sometimes you like Marine into Karth and you're just sad. But like, you could just, you know, throw a Shadow of the East in there and that's not terrible. Like, Targ runs a reasonable number of Summer plots. It's the only one of these I think is at all usable that we know of. And Black Market Merchant is just gonna end up being stupidly busted, and I hate it a lot. Someone's gonna figure out a stupid combo.
I mean, you don't need to figure out a stupid combo. You just find room in the Banner Dragon Voltron package for 2 or 3 of these. Like, the combo's already there.
Yeah. I mean,
like, it just makes them more consistent.
That's what we needed.
So you now have 6 gifts of the Widow. Well, you have half a gift.
Many gifts?
Yes.
You need all the gifts.
You do. Like, because you've got a lot of targets and you just want to consistently see them. So now you have 6 opportunities to tutor out your... Because it's not even a Targ one, right?
No.
So if you're running it out of...
Yeah, you can get Seal or that new Ralar thing we saw today on the stream.
Yeah, you can get Lord Commander. You can do like all the things that those decks want to do. You know, like, you could go... Like, it definitely powers up the Targ, the mono Targ cohort version of it. It powers up the Tyrell Dragon. It powers up the Jesse's favorite deck. Probably Jesse's favorite deck probably either is Night's Watch Cohort Dragon now. Like, that becomes much more consistent, particularly when you're running the 75-card version. So you now have six shots at this a version of this effect. Or if you just want to do Night's Watch Dragon, like, this is a very strong card. Like, this is screaming to play Voltron.
Yeah, for sure.
So
I do think Shadow of the East is kind of a cool, spicy one of in some target builds. But like, once you determine your plot line, like, you can just be like, oh, cool, can I run one of these instead of one of these other cards? Yeah, that seems pretty solid.
And just any summer plot. So it could just be incidentally your opponent has a summer plot. Yeah. So, which is pretty common. Yeah,
that's likely. I'm not even sure there has to be a summer plot. I mean, it's attachment control. I can probably leave in Shadows till I need it. Like, I'm not going all in, but 1x sounds very reasonable.
There are a lot of times people, like, I'm talking card decks with people, and they're just like, oh, I gotta have two or three Viserys, and, like, I've always hated having to put more than one Viserys in the deck, so, like, this is exactly the kind of card I'm looking for when I don't want to play another unique one-strength monocon in my deck.
Hmm. Yeah.
That does the same.
And this is only two cost, which is really nice. Shadow Zero is very, very strong on this.
I love any shadow card that comes out for free. Like,
almost, I think. There's one that was real, real bad. I just don't remember what it was off the top of my head.
Well, there's the Night's Watch one that we just saw.
Oh, this one. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I'm going to give this faction an A. Because, God forbid, Targ actually gets a bad pack.
Yeah. They seem very reasonable. I don't know if I'm quite A level with just a utility card like Shadow, but yeah, B.
B sounds good. I am definitely a mark for the market.
Yeah. Moment. Search is always, well, I was about to say good to see. I'm going to go with always strong. There we go.
Like, honestly, if I was just playing a burn deck and I had Beggar Kings in it, I'm like even more excited that this, like, to play a Beggar King module with this guy around. It's just more easy ways for me to get Beggar King out. Even if I'm not building some stupid, like, Voltron deck.
Can I just say, ugh?
Is that about the Martell cards?
No, the Martell cards are dope. That's still about Black Market Merchant, who I really hate.
That's fair. All right, I guess I should do Martell then, huh? So the first one with the character, it is a non-loyal companion, the Fowler Twins. They are unique. They are 3 costs, 2 strength, they have an intrigue and power icon. They have the action, choose a character. That character must be declared as an attacker or a defender in the next challenge initiated this phase if able. Limit once per phase. The other one is a dashed shadow event. It is loyal, has a shadow cost of 1. Action, choose a character. Till the end of phase, that character loses a challenge icon of your choice. If there's a scheme plot revealed, return Shadow of the South to your hand instead of placing it in your discard pile. So, why would I ever not, for the rest of forever, run at least 1 Fowler Twins in my Martell or Banner deck? Holy crap.
So amazing.
I guess.
This card is really good. Shadow of the South doesn't impress me that much. Like, there's just so many good ways to deal to control icons. This is kind of underwhelming. Like, it might be a one of if you've got, you know, multiple schemes in your plot line. Otherwise, it's kind of meh. But, like, the Fowler Twins is a card to be super excited about if you like control.
I think it's going to be super cool, and I'm going to be that lone voice for Melee here. I think this is going to be very interesting in Melee to screw with people.
In
Melee, this fizzles, though, right? So,
not necessarily. If you can force someone to defend is probably the most.
Oh, okay.
The more common.
It can fizzle, right? It doesn't stick on the character until they're able to be a participant.
Right. And then it's dead.
Yeah. I just wanted to be clear.
Yeah, it would probably take some, you know, table negotiating with whoever's attacking would be the main thing. But I could potentially see that some times where you screw up an opponent on their attacks with it too. But with some table talk, I think it would be fun.
I don't care about Melee, but Fowler Twins is utterly amazing. Like, just the two-card combos you can pull off with this damn card are completely amazing. Like, that she doesn't have to participate, that, like, you can look at your opponent's board and be like, oh, you have X icon, like, and I really want to get this through on my turn, like, since I'm going second, go. Like, and that's without any of the really cool, like, hey, I can just immediately bounce one of your guys back to hand with the little shadows guy. And it's just, Fowler Twins is amazing. Shadow of the South might as well not have been printed, but Fowler Twins is amazing. It is.
The Fowler Twins, this is the first time we've had this kind of, this level of power and like forcing a block without having to attack with a difficult to play character. So it's super high ceiling.
It's one of the better cards in the game basically immediately. Like, I think it's hard to overstate exactly how good this is going to be and how much it changes what you, how your opponent has to play. Like, the threat of activation on this is amazing. This is going to reward skill.
That's going to be the biggest thing. It's definitely a high, like, skill cap kind of card.
Yep. I think that this, up with no surprises, and to a lesser extent, Night Flyer, those are the three cards I think that completely reshape the meta, and are just really powerful. I mean, I think it's an S-tier card. So Shadow of the South, I guess, of the four of us, I'm probably the most bullish on, because I think that redundancy is really important of effects, and providing just a... There's no drawback. It's 3 gold, obviously, but besides the cost, there's no drawback to Shadow of the South. You can do it at any phase, you can do it...
Why would I want to take icons outside of the challenge phase?
Oh, that seems like an excessive...
Okay, so Shadow of the South, I see
Roy's argument. I just think that, like, right now, at least, until we cycle, like, Martell has so many cheap ways to remove icons that are so easy to do. But, you know, rotation is a thing, and then when we lose 9 attachment capability, like, Shadow of the South might become a requirement.
Still not running a 3 cost for 1 icon removal. Like, 3 is just a lot for 1 icon. If it were, like, take away all icons for 3, we could start talking.
Glazer, I feel like you and I are going to get in a really big argument about a 3 cost event that is coming up soon.
Also consider this. Martell has the shadow tax because of Shadow City. So you're not really paying 3 if you're actually playing a dedicated Shadows deck. Yeah. Because you automatically are getting the reduction from the city, I mean, probably a lot of the time. So you might just be cutting it in for 1 and playing
sure,
it for 1.
Even then, I probably don't really super
so then
want
it's
that.
2 for 1 icon.
But I think it's like a C card. It's a C card. But I think it offers redundancy to Martell, and I think Martell and Glazer, I literally helped build your deck. I think Martell is at its strength when it can spread its answers and its threats across the board and providing an additional level of redundancy for that effect, particularly in a way that people aren't necessarily ready for right now. So if everyone's running Vinces and Treacheries and character ability cancels and character blanking or location blanking, having an event that consistently always removes a power, a military icon from any character at 3 gold, I think there are times when you would want that. So as a one of, right? Like, there's just, I think throwing, like, this is something that Martell will look at when it wants to spread its threats across the board. It's still a C card, but I think it's definitely something that people need to keep in mind because it will blow you out. You'll be playing against a Martell Wars deck that is just running one of these, and you're like, okay, I'm safe from this. I got the Vince to answer their bullshit character or whatever, and then they go Shadow of the South, and you're like, oh. Fuck.
It will always compete with the Corset card, though, that just strips all 3 icons for 1, but it only works on 4 or less cost guys, but or 5 or less cost guys.
I mean, we can't even 100% agree on what it does. That's how often it comes.
But I mean, if you have like a 20 strength Tywin staring you down and you need to get a challenge through, yes, this is the ideal card. Like, okay, I'm getting this challenge through. It doesn't matter how big your guy is. I can get rid of this 1 icon I need to get rid of. It does have its use.
Yeah. I mean,
at post-rotation, yeah. I suppose.
There's a card that does basically what this does for one more gold, right? But it also gives you a really good body.
I agree.
Or less gold, like, if you're phlebotoming, like, or Arianing, or Obare.
All of those things are true, and I 100% agree with both of you. But what I'm saying is, different levels of this meta sometimes calls for different levels of interaction, and there will be times when Shadow of the South is the level of interaction you want for icon stripping.
Maybe I'm still not running it. Like, I can't imagine building a deck and being like, "This is my last card."
I am willing to bet that there will be at some point when you go, "You know what? This is going to be card 61," or you'll be like, "Oh, you know, Roy, make sure you put in a Shadow of the South in my box in case I want to swap it in at the last minute."
But I never end up, like, or almost never end up actually swapping.
Whenever I don't bring the cards, you really want to swap it in.
Yeah, well, let's...
If Darkwing Star Lords ever officially comes back, for real, then you're going to
want... You will indeed.
If Darkwing Star Lords is a card, I will play this. You are correct. If this said, "And draw a card," I think it's automatically solid.
Ooh.
Yeah, but it doesn't, so I'm not playing it. However, Fowler Twins is an S, so I'm giving the house an S. I don't care. Fowler Twins is, like, my new favorite card.
I'm very, very high on Fowler Twins. I would also give them an S.
I'm really looking forward to all the weird shit I can do with it.
It's going to lead to some cool stuff, I think.
All right. Who wants the Ghost of High Heart?
I'll do the Ghost of High Heart.
Go for it.
All right. Ghost of High Heart is a unique, neutral, 3-cost character with 2 strength and an intrigue icon. She has the ally and brotherhood traits. While you control no loyal characters, each character you control gets +1 strength. And she has the challenge action. Kneel, Ghost of High Heart, to look at a player's hand. Choose and discard 1 card from that hand, then that player draws 1 card. This card was designed by the 2006 world champion, Matthew Lay.
Rings!
Last time he showed up on time for a tournament.
Oh, zing.
Burn.
This is like another S tier card for sure.
Yeah. What deck are you not running 1 copy of this in?
Stark.
1? What deck am I not running?
At least 1.
Stark definitely.
Stark doesn't run it.
Builders.
Everything else probably does.
Builders definitely doesn't run it.
I don't know.
Why not?
Because right now the flex spots in Builders are going towards your military icons. Not towards card advantage.
No, it's not card advantage, really. It's card knowledge and, like, prediction.
Card filtering.
Well, I mean, so I guess it's filtering, yeah.
I mean, I guess fundamentally, like, maybe I learned from the Dan Struhall and Dave Strom school of this card that you 75% of the time target yourself with this card. Like,
I mean,
that's how
No,
I think in the early game you target your opponent a lot, and in the late game you target yourself a lot, and that's kind of usually the way it goes.
I think that's pretty reasonable. I mean, if that's your use case scenario, like, this is in some ways just a worse gold mines, which is good but not exciting. But all that hand knowledge and disrupting your opponent's plans by ditching their strongest character or discarding something you've returned to their hand through a wide variety of effects at this point, like, oh man, that's huge.
I play a lot of control decks that rely on very important character abilities. This game right now is dominated by Drown God Fanatic. This card is the first card we've gotten since Drown God Fanatic came out that immediately answers that problem.
Can I ask CT though? There's a card that is a good answer to this card. Do you know what it is? Drown God Fanatic.
Are you going to use your Drown God Fanatic to stop this trigger? Okay, I still got the Drown God Fanatic.
Then you have no choice with that stuff
out of your hand. Yeah, and now I'm getting the triggers I need on my important characters that are
fair
utilizing my strat.
Fair, but I don't know.
It forces them to use it on
I think Ghost of Pirates is a fantastic card, but I just think that...
Yeah. That's the same thing as just, like, baiting a treachery with another cancel, like, the argument that's been around since the beginning. That's fine, as long as I then get to use my impactful play on it.
Right.
I mean, baiting. Like, they literally have to use the Drown God Disciple.
How may I put this?
Other than, like, literally a command that says it, because if they don't, you discard the disciple, and now it can't be, you know,
recurred.
Run back through their usual recursion engine or anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, I'm going to ghost you every turn. If you cancel one, that's fine, but I only get to embarrass you so many times.
You know what card actually answers this? Venablade.
Nope.
Venomous there
blade. Yeah. I mean, obviously, it can be burned, it can be poisoned.
Show of strength.
Really happy.
Show of strength.
As long as you're the first player.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Not if it's a...
you know what card this is
turn,
real...
And you
know what deck this is real bad for? Like, real, real bad for? Martell Wars. Getting your Doran's game chucked is real bad. So, what I wanted to talk about with this card is I think there are now five neutrals that belong in every non-Stark, non-like builder slash Drowned God specific trait deck. And this is the fifth of them. I think 2 to 3 Begging Brothers, 1 to 2 Old Billbone, and then 1 to 2 of this belong in basically every deck. Right? Wrong?
You say I have to buy two of
them. These are all good cards.
So, like, you want 5 spots for neutrals in almost every deck. Is that a good thing?
Makes plain.
No, but the game's getting to the point now where that's just what happens. Like, eventually we have all these neutral cards we have to play. I mean, it's not as bad as it was in first edition.
I'm just bummed that this does not say cannot be returned to hand on it. That's one of my favorite old time stories that some of the newer listeners may not have heard. That back in the day when Matt designed this for CCG edition, John Bruno had won the year beforehand and created First Snow of Winter, which at the time discarded, I think it was Strength 2 or less, might have been Cost 2 or less, I forget which.
I think it was Cost still, right?
Cost? Okay, maybe it was Cost. Either way, then Matt won in the succeeding year and decided he purposefully wanted to design a card just to be immune to the previous champ's card. So she originally could not be discarded. So I'm a little bummed to see some variation of that not return.
So do we think she helps at all the theme that she semi-supports with her first ability? So does she help Brotherhood decks at all?
She helps Martell decks that just casually don't run any loyals. Like, because I think Martell will be really...
Which is very
different. Yeah, I mean, it's basically... Yeah. It's green...
Yeah, there's actually a lot of bear decks right now that don't have loyals either, so she's pretty good there.
And, I mean, and even some Martell decks, like, I've noticed ones that I play that are very light on loyals still maybe have, like, Obara in for some bouncing.
Yeah, but she bounces.
But yeah, I was going to say, but you could just remove her from play for the strength.
There's one good loyal in Martell that has to be in every deck. But even then, I've been cutting it lately or going down to 2. Greenblood Trader. But those tend not to stay in play for very long, so it's fine. Like, it'd be nice that military you like, all right, claim Greenblood. All right, cool. Now you can't win anything else. My entire board just got +1 strength.
Yeah. Yeah, ghost.
But yeah, I mean, if Brotherhood actually does become more playable, she's definitely...
I don't think Brotherhood is bad after a couple of factions.
Yeah, it always kind of bounces in and out, like a good build pops up here and there, and then just kind of falls under the radar again real quick, but it's always, like, out there.
Yeah, but the problem is the best factions, their loyal cards are just so good.
So loyal characters, Martell like Fanatics Martell's not one of the best
Mira's and... But you just said Green to Blood Trader, but you're going to give up Green
to Blood Trader. In some decks, absolutely. I don't run any in the Shadows. Nope. And, okay. I mean, like...
But you're... pulled by. Hold on. But you're running the Shadows.
Wait, you don't play Archie?
Archibald is not loyal. Garrus.
Oh, yeah, you're
But here's the thing. But the fact that you're running no loyal cards there still doesn't make the agenda interesting.
What agenda?
The no loyal characters agenda. This is what I'm saying. When we say Brotherhood decks, that's what I'm thinking of. Not like
I would run it in my Martell Shadows. Like, this is going in Martell Shadows because the only loyal, I think, there's Hota who doesn't stay in play and Garrus who doesn't stay in play. So, like,
yeah.
There's only no characters in Martellus Tam that you generally keep
well, and already Big Ariane, but like, whatever. If she stayed in play, something went horribly wrong.
Yeah.
I wonder how many loyals I run in the lion. Oh, hey, Chris, I want your lion. I know it's yours.
Okay, so are we ready to move on to what I think will probably be one of the more divisive cards?
Yeah.
Tonight?
I guess I will.
I'm saving myself for the one after this.
So Shadow Politics is a shadow event, which means only out of shadows. Shadow 1. Choose one. Choose and discard one card from shadows. Choose 5 cards and discard pile and remove them from the game. Look at an opponent's hand. I think it's good. I don't think it really sees play as more than a one of anywhere. But I think like it's both good and interesting. Even if you're only just looking at an opponent's deck. Looking at an opponent's deck is a really, really... Sorry, looking at an opponent's hand. Excuse me, said the wrong word.
Yeah,
looking at an opponent's hand is a really, really strong effect. Just knowing what they have. I mean, like, between that and, like, the discard one card from Shadows, I think this is pretty solid. Again, never more than a one of, and I'm not even convinced it's that, but I like it, even if it's not great.
I mean, I think Ghost is the... Ghost of High Heart, that is the stronger way to look at their hand, since it's repeatable, but, I mean, it's that... This still has options. I like seeing modular cards like this with different options. I wouldn't mind seeing a few more like this in Thrones. Shadow Politics, you know, oddly enough, I think the card removal might be the most commonly chosen option, but I don't know. It feels like kind of a Meta Valve card, and maybe another one of those that would have been really great if Rookery took off.
I mean, if it screws up Ratcook.
Yeah, so all three of these are kind of like super good effects that in a vacuum you would be like, oh wow, this is super powerful. But like the card somehow feels underwhelming, but it does feel like depending on how the meta goes, it'll show up in decks. You know, if Flea Bottom is still really good, or if like recruitment, big wall decks just take off or whatever, like these cards could be pretty useful. And if Shadows gets popular, I mean, it does just let you assassinate a card in Shadows, which is pretty good, depending on what it is. There's not a lot of low-impact Shadow cards, so if you're just paying $3 to kill a Shadow card, that's not bad.
Discard, not kill.
Yeah.
Discard. Well, yeah, but assuming they paid to put it in Shadows, and then you're blowing it up, like, that's a decent tempo hit, probably.
One for one, and you lose on gold?
Yeah. But you're probably stopping like an Aegon or something.
Yeah, or Mira. I mean, Mira's a common hit, right? And she's recycled.
Or Robert Strong, yeah. Or right. Whatever.
I'm surprised. I expected them,
I like it.
Particularly
I Glazer,
to be more aggressive about this card's quality. I think this card is. I think this card in a vacuum is pretty good, but I think it's mostly garbage, because, like I. We'll start from where I think it will see the most play, and we'll go to the bottom one, where I think I assume I'm going to be yelled at by Glazer and CT. Choose and discard one card from Shadows is perfectly acceptable to pay 3 gold for. So you trade one for one, and if they've not brought it, unless it's Mira, you lose on tempo because you're paying 3 gold to get rid of their 2 gold, which is fine, particularly if it's a really critical swingy play, and it can be done at any time. That's cool. So very useful in that case, but still, is it worth a card? Not really. Unless the meta is just overrun by good Shadows cards. Then the choose 5, remove him from the game, that's also fine, but definitely not something that you would see. Like, there's a versions of this card, like the dead pile one that, you know, removes all non-unique characters and draws you a card, and that still only really sees very niche play and generally these playing bad decks or combo decks, but it's fine. You know, if Flea Bottom is running over, if those wall decks are running over, it's fine. And then looking at your opponent's hand with no form of interaction with your opponent's hand, well, I know that makes a lot of people who view, you know, who believe they can outplay everyone with perfect information happy. Is that worth a card though? like what makes things like Ghost of High Heart really powerful, what makes his Viper Eyes really powerful, what makes Scene of Flames really powerful, is it's not just look at your opponent's hand, it's look at your opponent's hand and interact with it in some way. Shadow Politics is I just see your hand. I pay 3 gold, I get to see your hand. Okay. That's good. That's
yeah, this feels a lot weaker because we now have this influx of Vera cards that already cost 3, but you're getting like a body and you're getting to look at your
yeah, and hand, that so. Body furthers your game plan, right? Like as an event, right. All 3 of these effects, even though it's modular, is garbage. Like I think that if Issy's play, it's going to be because you need the first 2 as a meta valve and you're pained that you have to play this card because this card furthers no one's game plan at all. Unlike particularly with Ghost of High Heart literally sitting next to it in our on the file that we're looking at on the FFG website, the FFG app, like you literally see a better version of one of its most interesting effects, which is that, you know, this Ghost of High Heart, the opportunity cost of playing this card is relatively low. 3 for 2, 1 icon is kind of garbagey, but like if you are top decking and you just need a character, you have a character that could do a challenge, it can defend a challenge. It has strength. Like, yeah. Shadow Politics is garbage. Like, I'm going to just go out there and just say it's an F card. Ooh. That maybe is a niche card in some metas, and that would bring it to a D. But I think that this is definitely one of the most overrated. It's a trap card, if there ever was one. And I think Thrones players who particularly look at the third one need to – the third mode of this – need to think a little bit more about what makes looking at your opponent's hand a useful thing to do in card games.
Trap is probably a good assessment because it definitely has like all these shiny abilities on it. So it like pulls to the jank side of you, but then from an efficiency standpoint, like, yeah, this card is just not good. And like if you hit an Aegon or like a Garrus, like you're like, yeah, but like how often is that going to happen? Like most of the time, this card's not going to do that much. You're going to hit a hired assassin and be like, oh, fuck, this was garbage. Or,
like, again, like, I think like we don't talk enough about like the tempo cost of 3 for 2, right? Again, like the best card I think you can really hit here is like Mira, because even like if you hit a Mandan Moore or you hit a Robert Strong, you know, your initial gold investment is a card and 2 gold.
I mean, hitting Mira doesn't even matter because they're just going to get her back with
right,
something.
Right, they're going to get her back with something. Like, hitting Aegon is like... situation, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. A clearly reasonable, returnable situation. But, like, I think even hitting the more expensive Shadows cards, it's not as big a tempo hit because you just invested 2 gold in a card. Versus the 3 gold and a card that they invested in this. So you're up on tempo there. So...
Yeah, there's like 2 cards. Like, I honestly think just hitting Aegon and Garrus are like the big ones, but if you don't hit those, you're not getting your value.
Yeah, okay. I think it's a C minus, but fine. I just like it more than I think it's any good, I think is where I come down on this card.
When you are playing Darkwing's Dark Word, sure. You will tell Roy to put one of them in your box.
when I'm playing Darkwing's Dark Words, one will be played. That's accurate.
All right, well, you're going to read our former co-host.
Yeah, here we go. We've got another one from a former co-host of the show, Greg Atkinson. This one was his 2009 Joust win. Knights of the Hollow Hill agenda. You cannot place cards during setup. Your other cards do not provide a gold bonus. +3 gold, +2 initiative, +1 reserve. I'm sure the conversation is going to wander far away from this very quickly. So before talking about the effects of the card itself, I do just want to slip in about the art. I'm pretty miffed about the replacement art here. I mean, It's good enough art on its own, but I am pretty miffed that Greg's been removed from this, and which now means the art has been changed or altered or kind of screwed him over in both of his champ cards so that he does not get featured. I mean, in some things, I can kind of understand it. Like, I guess a lot of the agendas do have this kind of stained glass thing, but not all of them, and not all of the champ cards. I mean, Reigns of Castamere agenda has kind of that bannery looking art, but it was a new agenda, so it needed new art anyway. You look at Assault from the Shadows, it does not have the banner or the stained glass style art. It just has art of a scene. Like, Knights of the Hollow Hill already had art done, so I don't see the need to remove one of the perks of having, you know, a champ card design when the art was already there. You know, it just feels very weird to me.
Real quick, though, I mean, it is a shame that Greg lost his picture on this, but, like, all of the champ agendas no longer have their person on them. Like, Corey got screwed, too.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure somewhere in the rumor mill I heard at one point that if you designed a agenda, you couldn't have your likeness.
It's a very bizarre and arbitrary rule for FFG to have. For all,
I agree, but I don't... I mean, Alvaro, who, it was a new agenda, didn't get it. The Assault Champion, which was Jesus.
Cohort and Ward didn't get one.
None of them did, though. Corey's was the only other one that was an existing agenda. Like, sorry, in first edition.
We could just say he had a revoke. It's a punishment for him having inflicted Flea Bottom on us.
Well, I think this Flea Bottom wound up a little different than what he wanted anyway, but...
There's an important note for listeners. Glazer will refer to this agenda from this point on as 3-2-1. So it's important that you understand that.
Yeah.
So
that's fair.
Maybe even 2-2-2 for literally no reason anymore.
the stats were formerly 2-2-2 in first edition, though. It did slightly different things.
We'll just call it the final countdown now instead, because it goes 3-2-1.
Oh, I love it.
I approve.
But
final countdown, that's good.
3-2-1, by the way, is my son's birthday, so I'm a real big fan of this.
There you go.
But so, about the effect itself, I mean, it's a very interesting agenda, right? It's one I want to experiment with. It's resource advantage rather than kind of mucking challenges.
Card advantage.
Which is a little bit of a different slant. So I like that. Historically, in first edition, it was actually one of the strongest agendas for a very long time. But that was on the back of a very different resource scheme using both gold and influence and those powerful effects. I'm not sure that just bumping the gold up to +3 instead of +2 is really equivalent in second edition. And as like more aggro focused as second edition tends to be, I feel like passing up setup is even more of a drawback than it used to be. Plus, characters are just stickier. This is an agenda that really needs to lean into control effects and board wipes historically to make up for that slow start. And characters are just vastly more durable, from saves to protect from Valor Margolis or other resets like Valor Harris or First Snow Winter or Wildfire leaving stuff behind on the board. I just really, really worry that this is not a meta that is going to be forgiving enough for it.
I think the other thing that's really important to compare it from first edition to second edition is, like, in first edition, you ran legitimately garbage cards for setup, or close to garbage cards for setup. You were running Ravens, you were running Refugees, these cards that just were kind of garbagey. And then you were running this big econ package to make your deck consistent. Knights of the Hollow Hill then let you cut a bunch of garbage out of your hand. Your deck, rather, and made all your draws good, or much better, at least. In second edition, characters, except for the reducers, Aaron's least favorite cards, and so Aaron's already cut them from his decks, are pretty good. Like, the fact that we don't scale down to zero with characters means that, and there are very few one drops, means that two drops is extremely common in characters, and many factions have access to two, three, or four different good two drops that it feels good to run, that makes setup more desirable than it was in first edition. So the opportunity cost is even higher for Knights of the Hollow Hill. And not only just to build on will, the control effects are weaker, the resets are weaker, character, like big picture characters are stickier thanks to saves. I mean, I'm sounding, we're all sounding like Scott now. It's just all of those things about second edition. So that's a huge weakness. That said, I do think Knights of the Hollow Hill will eventually find its place in the meta. It's just going to take a lot of work on the end of a lot of the best deck builders, because you've got to be able to leverage this. Like, baseline 5 gold valors is redonkadonk. Well, 5 gold, 2 initiative, 6 reserve valors is like, what? Like,
5 gold blood of the dragons.
5 gold blood of the dragons. Things like 8 gold fortified positions. Torsos. Like, it with six reserve, it's just very strong. But you have to, like, there has to be a point, and I think it's going to start with Martell, and to a lesser extent, maybe Targaryen.
Yeah.
That is where this is going to start, but it could, you could see it spiral out of other factions. But it needs to be factions that have these effects with easy access and are just super busted.
Yeah, kind of jumping off of those, both of your points, like, we, Westeros Bleeds was just always a factor in 1.0. And, like, we don't even have that card. And Varys is not close to Westeros.
Your closest bet is,
and that was always
the Giants into Varys play.
That's a 2-card combo.
Right. It's not nearly as efficient as just, like, having Westeros Bleeds available. Now, I mean, we talked about Ghost of Highheart already, and, like, funnily enough, it's in this pack. So it's like, that makes me want to try and make Knights of the Hollow Hill work with Varys, since it'll be a little bit easier to control the answers to Varys with Ghost of Highheart. But, like, yeah, basically, well, exactly what you guys said.
Also, your exactly opponent can use Ghost to pull the Varys out of your hand when you're sitting on him waiting to draw off Mask of the Giants.
Yeah, I think the deck is stacked against the Final Countdown being a spectacular agenda in this meta. But I don't know, I definitely want to try. Like, it's one of those agendas that, like, I really want to try and make work, but I'm not sure it's there. I definitely think it's only playable out of, like, Martell and Targ, because Targ just doesn't care about its money half the time. Like, it's good. It's just going to put cards out there anyway, and Martell can get around the setup not being as good, like we talked about. But, yeah, I think
a lot of... You may also see a Night's Watch. It's the factions that have the best 2-drop limiteds.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, yes. You're absolutely right. Daryl and I talked about builders out of this, like, for an hour.
I don't know. No setup on builders? Oof.
That hurts. But the 2-drop
really
good point, particularly in Martell, where you're getting this initiative bonus, making it even easier to ensure you go second, and you get the full 2 gold from their fiefdom. So,
yeah, that's true. I completely space Night's Watch, but Night's Watch absolutely can, I think, make this work too. Giving up a setup is rough, but, like, those stats for any Night's Watch deck is just, like, great. Any Night's Watch plots.
The beauty of this in Martell is explicitly in that, like, in Martell, you don't, how do I phrase this? Like, in Martell, you very, very often open 771, Fallen. And when you open 771, you're kind of just giving up on that character anyway, right? Like, if you're going to, like, lose that character anyway, then there's very little reason. Whatever character you set up. So now it's a 10-9-1, and you don't lose
that character. 7 reserve, I think.
10-9-8.
10-9-1, no, it's already 10-9-1.
Yeah, 7 to start with. Yeah. So those are some really good stats.
I mean, yeah, it seems like it might be good.
Yeah, I mean.
So, I don't know. That seems really reasonable to me. Or, you know, really unreasonable as the case may be.
You're not even, like, telegraphing your opening into a random one-off Mabel from somebody, so I like that.
I mean, the thing about Knights...
Yeah, and it feels really good when they riddle you, thinking you're going to play at the gates, and then they just sacrifice the character, I mean, and you get 10 gold.
That'll be great.
That feels good.
I mean, one of the drawbacks of Knights of the Hollow Hill, though, is it did tend to have, particularly early in the game, a relatively linear play pattern. You know, what was that? What was the ridiculous rally cry that it frequently opened in first edition? Like, there were some very predictable play patterns.
I mean, it's opening one of three. It's opening one of three plots in second edition in like Targ and Martell. It's opening March for Snow, or March maybe, for Snow.
Maybe
or,
always or,
seven or fall, ten on their location.
Wait. How have Glazer and I not even brought up the fact that you can now just open Behest and actually win initiative against almost every economy plot, then flip into something else?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's insane. That's
also really cool.
That's super cool. You're only going to lose to, lose to like Summer Harvest, basically.
Yeah. Well, you're going to lose to other
people. In the mirror, sure.
If you do that.
But again, like, if you can solve this opening problem, and maybe Glazer and CT just gave you a way to solve the problem, I think the deck does definitely have its strengths, and it will see play. But it's not going to be the same stuff that we've seen for a while. And I think that this is going to... It's a Hollow Hill will catch the meta off guard when it breaks, and will run over some tournaments, and will take a while for people to get used to. So,
this is a far more exciting card to get as an agenda than like Green Sight.
Yes,
says a man who's played against Jesse playing Green Sight a lot.
I am a big fan of Green Sight in one exact deck type, but only one.
Lannister Greensight, right?
No. Night's Watch.
Oh, that Lanny Greensight dream. So who wants to take us home? I guess me or CT, do you want to take us home?
We all live in very different places. A City Besieged is a 2 gold, 8 initiative, 2 claim plot, city and siege traits, reserve of 5. When revealed, choose and kneel a location. Up to 2 locations instead if there's a city plot card in your use pile. I think this is really good if you're playing city plots.
Or Knights of the Hollow Hill, so I'm not stuck with 2 gold. That's the only thing that really worries.
I mean, or you're running at the gates, and it usually becomes 4 gold. Or
yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, kneeling 2 locations, winning initiative, getting 2 claim, that seems really good right now, like, as long as you have one other city plot in your use pile.
What it,
Glazer hates.
I think this is this is far better than that other one that we had, the draw one.
Yeah, yeah, this is better than the draw one, which is one of the worst plots in the game. So this at least has 2 claim. I think this is real bad. It's meant to be choke, right? Like, it's meant to be a choke plot, and it's just too scared to be a choke plot.
I was going to say, I don't think it's really a choke plot, right? This is the,
like the old one.
They knock out something like a wall or a marine for a turn, right?
Yeah, I think hitting 2 high-impact locations is pretty strong for this.
I mean,
like, it's not going to see play now, but if we have, like, legitimate city plot deck strategies, like, this is probably going to slot in super easily.
I think 2 gold is too little, unless you're playing Knights of the Hollow Hill, in which case it's a 5-10.
Unless you're playing the final countdown, in which case it's a 5-10.
5-10, 2-6.
2-6.
Yeah.
Hey, the reserve going is going to be very important in that situation.
Although, what the hell are you at the gatesing?
That's a Night's Watch.
I guess
a Greyhall.
You
get the Night's Watch location.
If you're playing Targ, you're definitely getting a Greyhall. If you're playing Night's Watch, or if you're playing Martell, I guess I don't really know yet.
I mean, maybe. It doesn't seem very practical for a one-off.
No, with the Night's Watch, you can also just get the zero drop. The Corset card. The Corset economy card still works.
Oh, yeah. You could just pull a Blood Orange Brew or a what have you. You could pull the new Night's Watch location for Night's Watch, I guess. The Flea Bottom Alley,
You can pull the Martell one just as draw.
That's true, too. Yeah, I mean,
like, turn one, draw 2 cards isn't the worst goddamn idea in the world, right?
Oh. Because
now you're just playing a draw 2, turn 1, which is terrible.
And you're already behind the 8-ball skipping setup, so you may lose those 2 challenges really easily.
Gosh, now Marta has win or die as a 8, 10, 1 plus your modifiers from your summer
seas.
Well,
are you going to play this season?
Don't get the gold bonus, though.
Yeah, I'm not running this season.
I think you're probably having to look at Dorn, then, right?
Going back to Knights of the Hollow Hill, I think you're only running the 2-drop limited and the corset econ, right?
Yeah, you're probably right. The reserves probably isn't worth the 2 gold by itself.
But just think about City Besieged. Like, City Besieged, just being able to go, like, you're against factions like Night's Watch, Targaryen, Greyjoy, going your best location and an economy card can help a lot. You know, like, turn 2, particularly, like, or turn 3, you know, like, against, even against Stark, going, like, okay, I open at the gates, I play a plot to help me keep up, all right, turn 3, I go... all right, I went initiative. I got 2 claim. Neil Winterfell, Neil Skagos.
Ooh, see? That's why I think this card is good, like, for sure. That is super.
That's a huge tempo play. It's real, like, one of the, like, 2 of the best Stark strategies are shut off. Stark doesn't have any stand for those locations. You know, against Night's Watch, going Neil the Wall, Neil an abandoned stronghold. Very strong.
Yeah. Lannister, you just hit Harrenhal in, like, one of their gold mines. Like, yep. That's super good.
I mean, the faction that relies on locations that this hurts the least is probably Martell. So, but still hitting Starfall economy? Would that hurt you, Glazer?
It would, with 2 claim, okay. Especially.
So, yeah. I wouldn't sleep on this card. Because it becomes if you're doing the at the gate strategy, it becomes a 4 gold. 8 initiative to claim.
Yeah, if we keep getting good city plots, this plot will definitely see play.
I hope we do.
And it avoids nice. A bunch of hate towards because it's with the siege and city trades, it avoids like edicts, it avoids naval and things like that. So,
yeah.
Strong. I think this is a we didn't rate Knights of the Hollow Hill, which I will give a countdown. I'll give the pawn countdown a B, and I'll give City Besieged a B plus.
I'm gonna City Besieged a B minus. I think you guys turned me around on it in certain decks.
Yeah, I'm gonna give Knights whatever that weird rating is that you give to cards.
Oh, the Wama triggering one.
I'm gonna give it the E rating. Yeah. We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out.
I mean, it's probably in that weird range where it's kind of bad a lot of the time, but somebody might bust it. So,
yeah. Oh, I'm gonna try.
I do theoretically like.
I don't have a lot of hype,
though. I'm willing to give it. I don't know. I'm still just turned off by that 2 gold. So I think I'm just gonna give it maybe a C plus at the moment. But I have hopes.
Oops.
All right. What will?
Props and slops?
There we go.
Is that what you were looking for?
Yeah.
All right, cool.
So CT, you're on a podcast normally. Yeah. What's it called? The Wars That Came?
The Wars to Come.
Wars That Went.
The Wars to Come. Okay.
It might be called the Final Countdown if this
I would listen to the Final Countdown.
Where can our listeners find The Wars to Come, and when do you guys record live?
We record live normally on Thursdays on Buzz's channel, but we actually are not recording on Thursday this week because I guess there's some small movie coming out that a bunch of people are going to go see about some purple guy and rocks. So there's actually going to be a show tomorrow night at 10 o'clock. Eastern time? Yeah.
Cool. So 9 o'clock on Buzz's time. Channel.
Yeah, so check that in tomorrow. Jesse wants to talk about agendas in the current meta. So we're going to do a lot of talk about the agendas right now and like how they stack up against each other, cool. I think. So that should be fun. I'm sure we'll talk about the final countdown now. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of discussion about the Prince that was promised after seeing that in action today a little bit. Been a lot of that's been a hot discussion on the Facebook page for sure, like all day. Those Prince that was promised targets. What are your guys' favorite Prince that was promised possibilities?
Core. Motherfucker.
Core old man. Right.
You guys think I'm joking, like I'm not gonna fucking try and
I would absolutely if Glazer showed up at a tournament with a Prince that was promised core old bear deck, I could just retire from Thrones after that. Like I don't need to follow the community. I don't need to play in tournaments. I don't need to do anything. Just Aaron playing a bunch of shitty Nice Watch cards and the core old bear at a tournament, a serious tournament.
I don't think I make enough tournaments for that to really be the case. But
for me, for those of you who don't really follow the lore, you have to know that Prince is a gender-neutral term in Old Valyrian. So for me, the prince that was promised is a princess in Catelyn Stark.
Mm-hmm.
And my infinite Catelyn deck will be great.
I like it.
What about you, Will?
I mean, as much as I want to be living the hot pie dream here, I think that's done to death, right? Gosh, I don't know. I'm not quite sure. I mean, Robert Baratheon, of course, looks like one of the short, easy answers. I mean, anybody with Intimidate and or Renown or a combination of the above winds up looking pretty tempting with that stand. So I guess I'm leaning into the challenge based stuff of it rather than shenanigans to get things going like Caitlyn.
I don't even know where I'm gonna go yet. Like obviously my playstyle easy answer is like Varus, Corset Varus, Ramsey. I don't know, builders with like Craster so they can just never Valor you. Stark with Greywind. Ghost of Iheart. We were just talking about how good this card is. What if you could just never kill her? Or just keep getting her back, you know? Seems pretty good. I think this agenda is pretty powerful.
Cycle Tywin? Or is that a box?
Box
the Tywin. One that looks at the top card of your Tywin?
I'm not seeing the line, Glazer.
I mean, core Tywin, I could definitely see Lannister players doing it.
Nah, that's silly.
That's too straightforward.
Here's the greatest tragedy in Game of Thrones 2nd Edition. The evil that was done to the true prince that was promised, my man Mace. Restricted list, hashtag free Mace, all I'm saying. With prince that was promised, Mace Dex is truly what we were promised. And the tyrannical FFG design people who are denying my religious freedom to worship at the altar of Mace Tyrell and Highgarden being played together in a prince that was promised deck, I think is tragic.
But the true prince is Stannis, so that's a lie.
No, the red woman can't interpret the flames like I can, CT, and the flames tell me I see Mace. I see Mace.
Yeah.
I see the Oath of Highgarden.
Which decks do you guys actually think are viable to run like multiple copies of characters, if any?
I'm psyched for a new Danny deck with Prince.
The Burn Danny?
But I'm saying like,
yeah.
But I'm saying like, would you run would you run all the Dannys?
I mean, two of the one you love and one of the extra. I think you would do that in the Catelyn deck.
Catelyn, sure. Stannis, maybe.
Yeah.
It'd be kind of annoying to go get the corset stand.
Well, the question is, are you actually using the character for utility or a win condition, right? Like, I think core Stannis right. and
they're just counterproductive for the most part.
Yeah, I don't know.
You could play King Rob and Core Rob.
There you go. That's a jet. Now you're just talking the Jesse dream. You've been friends with Jesse too long. Next, you're gonna be talking about Prince that was promised King Rob's no host. Ever.
So I had actually had a 25-minute long conversation today about the Timmit that was promised, and it was not Jesse Carpenter.
I mean, so, we got Seven Cost Tyrion if you really want to live that clansman dream, though.
Yeah, but the Timmit that was promised just has a nicer ring to it.
Will, what are you? You're the now that we've done this, we've been kind to CT and let him prop his show. What? You're the boss. What do you have any props and slops?
Whew, man. You know, I am gonna. I don't even know what to call it. I'm just gonna say it. It has been a wild yo-yo of emotion for the past week or so. Some folks might remember I was a huge fan of the City of Heroes MMO. And that it was shut down in 2012, and it has been undergoing a roller coaster ride of revelations and changes in the former community over the past week. People went all up in arms over discovering some other players had a secret server for the last 6+ years, and then server code got leaked. And a server got put up for 3 days, and then it got pulled again because somebody got scared they were going to get sued, and now people are up in arms again, and now people are in talks with NCSoft, the former publisher, and it's just it's wild and crazy. I'm waiting to see how it shakes out. So if something does get up and going again, it'll be interesting to see an MMO take 6 years off and then be playable again. So I don't know.
Nice.
That's all I got.
Oh shit, I have another prop. I literally just read that Jerome Flynn has been cast to be a new version of the Dark Tower that has nothing to do with
it's
the
a
movie
prequel, on Amazon, evidently. Right? So I was seeing some bets earlier today that he might be playing Stephen Deschain, Roland's father, which would be very interesting.
He could also be the Man in Black.
I could see him as the Man in Black. Or he could also be...
apparently they've already cast the Man in Black.
What's his name? The failed gunslinger that's the villain in Wizard of Glass.
He'd be a perfect
cast. Oh, they do. Like, I mean, Wizard of the Glass is the best Dark Tower book, so...
It is.
Apparently, this says that the first season will be the Wizard in Glass, and that... Roland and the Man in Black have been cast, and we don't know who Jerome
Flynn is. I bet
so he's probably the villain then. The guy who's then, which makes sense because he would be good in that role.
His name now, but
yeah. But yeah, he'd be too old to be
Cutter. Oh yeah, Curry, my favorite gunslinger.
I mean, I really do. Of all, probably The Wizard in the Glass is my second favorite Stephen King book. So maybe my third, depending. So it's definitely his best Dark Tower book.
It is.
And shoulders above everything else.
That does.
Oh man, I really like. I really like number 2.
The Wind Through the Keyhole is not bad. Or yeah, that's the name, right? The other sequel.
Yeah, no, I thought it was The Door.
That's the option.
The Door.
Yeah.
Like something. The Door.
Maybe.
The Wind Through the Keyhole is the one that is him telling the story in the middle of. Like between books.
Yeah, they came out after the series was
Drawing done. Of the Three. Drawing of the Three is the
story. Yeah.
Yeah.
Drawing of the Three. And then Wasteland is the third, and then it's Wizard in the Glass.
Though, you know, this did remind me of Slop. Slop to the original Gunslinger being like re-edited for later re-releases. I swear I have an old version of it somewhere around here. Where Roland mentions in passing you know, other past gunslingers, and he mentions Jamie DeCurry and says something along the lines of Jamie being the only gunslinger that scared him. But newer editions, I can't find that anymore. So it's a bummer.
Yeah, I've only ever read the post-edited versions of the Gunslinger, so I have no opinions about that.
I've only read the revised copy as well.
Glazer, you got any props and slops?
Not really.
He wants to prop this sweet Dark Tower podcast.
I have a
podcast.
Couple that I want to do. I want to prop the Watchers on the Couch, of which three of the four people on this podcast right now, we're on the second episode of, which is weekly on my YouTube channel, twitch.tv/foeintel, around 10:30 p.m. EDT, where we talk about Game of Thrones, the television show. It's a lot of fun. It's ridiculous. We stay up way too late and we get way too drunk talking about.
My biggest regret is that we did not keep recording that extra hour.
Two hours.
There was probably an hour of actual extra quality content there. That's true.
And then I also want to prop, you know, it's still 2 days before I'll get an opportunity, 3 days, I guess, before I'll get an opportunity to do that, to actually see it. But I'm just going to prop it in advance. Avengers Endgame.
Yeah.
I'm incredibly excited. You know, I was just thinking about this week. Like the Marvel Cinematic Universe has been like a cultural touchdown for 10 years of my life, which is weird to think about, but you know, or I guess it's 11 years now because original Iron Man came out in 2008. Is just like amazing. Is to see the ending for so many of the characters that I've cared about. I mean, I'm a superhero fan from when I was very young. I've waxed and waned as a regular superhero fan over the course of my adult life, but I love shared universe storytelling. It's like I am a mark for this movie, and I'm just so incredibly excited for it. Alan and I are going to see it at 7 p.m. on Friday, and I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm sure we will talk about it next time I'm on this show because I won't be able to resist it, but I want to prop it in advance.
Yeah, I can't believe Danny died in the Battle of Winterfell.
Ooh,
spoilers!
Oh man, that brings us into the what?
The danger zone.
A fire!
Oh. 3, 2, 1.
Close that chapter.
We already did. Yeah, we lost the magic. We're just gonna close this chapter.